A scripture today is Exodus 32, 1 through 4, 19, and 25 through 35. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered around Aaron and said to him, "Come make gods for us who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what hath become of him." Aaron said to them, "Take off the gold rings that are on your ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people took off their gold rings from their ears and brought them to Aaron. He took the gold from them, formed in a mold, and cast an image of a calf. And they said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made proclamation and said, "Tomorrow shall be a festival to the Lord." They rose early the next day and offered burnt offerings, brought sacrifices of well-being, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose to revel. As soon as he came near the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, Moses' anger burned hot, and he threw the tablets from his hand and broke them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf that they had made, burned it with fire. When Moses saw that the people were running wild, for Aaron had let them run wild to the derision of their enemies, then Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, "Who is on the Lord's side? Come to me." And all the sons of Levi gathered around him. He said to them, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, put your sword down on your side, each of you. Go back and forth from the gate to gate throughout the camp, and each of you kill your brother, your friend, and your brother, your neighbor." The sons of Levi did as Moses commanded, and about 3,000 of the people fell on that day. Moses said, "Today you have ordained yourselves for the service of the Lord, each one at the cost of a son or a brother, and so have brought a blessing on yourselves this day." On the next day, Moses said to the people, "You have sinned a great sin, but now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin." So Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Alas, this people has sinned a great sin. They have made for themselves gods of gold. But now, if you will only forgive their sin, but if not, blot me out of the book that you have written." But the Lord said to Moses, "Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot out of my book. But now go, lead the people to the place about which I have spoken to you. See, my angel shall go in front of you. Nevertheless, when the day comes for punishment, I will punish them for their sin." Then the Lord sent a plague on people because they made the calf, the one that Aaron made. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Our journey through the Gospel of Luke continues this Sunday with readings out of the 15th chapter. If you are comfortable and capable of standing, I ask that you do so as we listen to Jesus and his teachings. "Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him." And am I in the right spot? Very good. "And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, 'This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them.' So he told them a parable." Oh, I know what happened. "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So the man divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant land. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, A severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to the fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So having heard both of the scriptures this morning, you understand the bulletin cover. A calf saying, "Give me my share of the grass." It's the prodigal calf. Actually, I hunted that directly out of Google, the two scriptures. We have the golden calf in Moses. We have the prodigal son, and I said prodigal calf. And look, I got that picture, and there it is. If only the calf was gold instead of brown, but such as such. I was thinking that "give me my share of the grass" might have special meaning in Colorado and other states where marijuana is legal, but I didn't think about that until later. What did you think of the golden calf? You've heard the golden calf before. We read pieces of it that aren't always read. The battle between those who would keep the golden calf and those who don't, and loss of life. It was a difficult time, but this is in part, we need to put this in context, that the Hebrews have come out of slavery in Egypt, traveled through the Red Sea, and they're in the wilderness, and Moses has gone up onto Mount Sinai, and he's taking dictation from God. And his typewriter is a stone tablet, so it's a slow process. And he's gone for quite a while. The people are upset. And the term is used, he is delayed on the mountain. And the people need to have something there, and Moses is gone, so they said, "Well, let's just go back to the good old religion. Let's go back to what we're familiar with. Heck, I've still got some jewelry from a golden calves, and I've got t-shirts with golden calves on it, and I've got all the things that were part of that culture and that religion. Let's just go back to that." And so they have Aaron help them. Moses comes down. God says, "You better get down there." And Moses comes back and he confronts his brother Aaron. Aaron says, They said to me, 'Make us gods who shall go before us.' As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So I said to them, whoever has gold, take it off. And so they gave it to me, and I threw it in the fire, and out came this calf." This is denial, isn't it? "It wasn't me. It was them. They asked me to do it, and I just threw the gold in there, and it just, out the calf came. It wasn't me." They had just been in Egypt. You'd think that they know the Nile, not denial. That was a pun, but we'll let it ride for now. Luckily for us, none of us ever do denial, do we? None of us would ever think that we might be distracted from being faithful followers. The people returning to the good old religion, it's always nice if you can get a hold of your God and hold it in your hand and keep it as something that you... And sometimes hide it away when you don't want God to see what you're doing. You see, it's better to be in control of your God than have this God that is omniscient and all-powerful and uncontrollable. And it's uncomfortable when this God isn't something you can hold on to and grasp. Now, hindsight, we know the rest of the story. We understand all that. And I don't think that there's very much temptation today for people to beginning to join cults around the golden calves. And that golden calf incident needs to be understood historically. Scholars believe this was a possible attempted coup by Aaron. And so the followers of Aaron were battling the followers of Moses. And the followers of Moses were the tribes, one of them was the tribe of Levi. And it became the Levitical priesthood. And so we don't accent that, but we need to understand what a traumatic change this was and what a difficult change it was to give up those idols, give up the golden calf, give up that religion that had been theirs for so long and was so comfortable. The good old time stuff. Certainly we wouldn't have problems with any idols, would we? Normally when you hear a sermon about idols, the pastors will at some point list sports. Because there's this odd tendency on days when the Broncos are playing to see the attendance on Sunday decline a little bit. And there's this sense that, well, what's more important? I don't know that I'm going to go down that path. I'm not sure that they're idols, and I think we can focus and give our attention to both, putting God first in all things. What about cars? I had an interesting funeral interview with a family once. And it was interesting because they lifted the one brother who had died, and one of the stories they told was how all of the brothers in the families had a competition each year to see which would be the first to buy the newest model of Chevy that came out. I believe it was Chevy. I don't remember which particular model or which brand, but this was the game, was all the brothers, they competed to see who would be the first to buy the new model out on the market. And it was humorous until it came clear that this had been quite a detrimental financial burden. They were so caught up in this competition to have the newest that they were running themselves into debt. And at some point, they finally gave up on the competition because they couldn't afford to keep buying a new car to try and keep ahead of their brothers. Was this an idol that they had placed in their lives? You be the judge. This week, I saw on the news that someone was killed at the Grand Canyon. They believe that he was taking a selfie and that he stumbled or tripped and fell and was killed. And this is becoming a major problem at the Grand Canyon. People so intent on their social media and trying to get enough likes, enough hits, enough attention for their... Is this idolatry? Is there a possibility that that draw is drawing them away from more important things? One of my worries is whether religion can be a golden calf. Now think about that. There's a difference between our relationship with God and religion. Sometimes religion is the perfect venue for that. Sometimes religion becomes its own entity, its own vehicle that separates off with its own set of agendas. And sometimes you can get caught up in all of the religion and the business of church and what have you, and forget about God and focusing and putting our attention on God. It worries me some. I don't think we're doing that. But it's something to contemplate on this Sunday that we are talking about golden calves and idols. Politics. Is it possible that some people have such an important focus on political parties or political ideals? Some particular hot-button topic, this agenda or that agenda, and they get so caught up in it that focuses them and that they forget that God is first. Now, I've heard people argue that science can be idolatry. And I think for some it is. It's easy enough to get a hold of science and here's something concrete, again, that you can calculate and you can figure out and you can decipher and you can test and you can measure. And as far as I've seen, there is not yet a Geiger counter for detecting God. We don't have an ability to do that and measure God and say, well, you have this much God in you and God is this much present in this gathering. And we'd like to be able to do that because it puts us in control, doesn't it? Now, I don't see a conflict between science and religion. My dad was a scientist, an engineer, and had a deep faith. He said, science explains some things, but there are things that science cannot explain that religion does. He says the two are compatible with one another. And understanding the difference and honoring both, there's not a problem with those. But it could be an idol for some. Creationism, evolutionism, it becomes a cause that's so overarching that they forget about God. So what are our idols? I don't know. I don't want to get too far into that. It's kind of depressing. It's kind of accusatory. And I want to just toss it out. Then we might say, well, I don't worship the golden calf, so I'm good. But what other idols are seductively distracting us and taking priority over our centering of God in our lives? That's what this Sunday is for. And we got to talk about the prodigal son. This is a story that most of us know. We've heard multiple times. But I selected the readings out of it in a way that changes the story a little bit because it leaves out the story of the other brother. You see, part of the parable that Jesus told is about another brother that's in the midst of that. He stays faithful while the other son goes off into dissolute living and squanders his inheritance, and the father honors him and the other brother is jealous. Take all of that out for a moment. Here is a father whose son leaves, takes his inheritance, squanders it, loses it, and is completely destitute and comes back. He comes back and he is contrite. Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. He is at the bottom of the barrel. He has lost everything. And he comes to his father acknowledging that. And the father welcomes him back. That is as it should be. That's what we need to understand. That's what we need to hear. And understand that sometimes we are the prodigals. Sometimes we are the ones that take the gifts and graces God has given us and run amok with them and squander them without remembering that they come from the Father. And we become estranged. We forget that one who loves us most. We forget that one who is always present with us and never fails. And we begin to depend upon ourselves. I had a good friend who was a brilliant mind, and he said, I work hard, he said, and this is me doing hard work and having all of these doing this programming that I do. He says, I work hard at that. And I said to him, I said, but where did you get the ability to do that work? Not everybody can program like you do. He says, no, you just have to work hard and you can do it. And I said, no. You have a gift for doing that. And that gift was given to you. A gift of God. You want to try and see someone draw? I'm a good example of someone who can't. I would like to be able to draw. I can do stick figures. That's the top of my line right there. So if you're able to do that and say, oh, no, 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 you just have to practice and work at it. I have tried. It is not one of the gifts and graces that God gave me. If you have that, acknowledge that as different and as a gift. Cooking, sewing, creating, loving, all of those gifts of God. And sometimes we misuse them. We forget that they are from God, and we forget to turn back and say, Father, I've sinned and forgotten about you. Take me back, please. Now in the story of the golden calf, that ending piece is kind of hard to hear because Moses is speaking for the people, and he said, if the people have sinned, he said, I will atone for that. And he's saying, I will be a part of the community and make atonement for those people. And God says, no. No, each of them will come before me. And I will look in my book, and each one of them I will decide. I thought I pulled out that verse. Oh, the Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot out of my book. Ouch. Keeping score, knowing which. And for them, there is no recourse. But that's not part of the parable that Jesus tells us. He tells it of the prodigal who has gone and spent all of his inheritance, who is destitute and comes back, and the father does not say to him, well, I hope you learned your lesson. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, well, go in and get a meal, get yourself cleaned up, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. We'll see what kind of punishment needs to be meted out for you. He puts a ring on his finger, his best robe on him, and feasts and celebrates because his son has returned. And there's the part that we need to hear the most. God celebrates our return. God lays a feast out for us when we return. God sacrifices the fatted calf to make a meal beyond meals when we return. A feast for us. What once was lost now is found. Amen.